You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Paff here, joined by Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, a new study examines the benefits of exercise on depression. A new technique to heal broken bones makes them better than ever. And good news from Voyager 1. Plus, on this day in history, we look at the term hillbilly. Where'd that come from? It's all coming up on Cool Stuff. A new study published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, long name there, indicates what many of us already knew to be true. Regular exercise can lower the risk of cardiovascular disease by as much as a quarter, in part by lowering stress. Now, as a runner myself, I could attest to the stress-relieving benefits of getting after it on the regular, but perhaps the most interesting finding from this particular study is the fact physical activity reduces cardiovascular disease risk to a greater extent among individuals with depression. So greater effects there. Generally speaking, the research indicates physical activity helps reduce stress-related brain activity, which is associated with the development of cardiovascular disease. A total of 50,359 individuals were a part of this study, which found that those who met workout recommendations of 150 minutes a week had a 23% lower risk of developing cardiovascular disease than those who did not meet that recommendation. Now, led by researchers at the Massachusetts General Hospital, the study found that over an average follow-up of 10 years, 12.9% of participants developed cardiovascular disease. Those who met the aforementioned physical activity recommendations had a lower risk of developing said disease, again, by 23%, and they also tended to have lower stress-related brain activity. They also found the cardiovascular benefit of exercise was twice as strong in participants with depression, as well as those with higher stress-related brain activity. Dr. Ahmed Tawakkal, a cardiologist at the Cardiovascular Imaging Research Center at said hospital and senior author of this study, hopes clinicians will use the research to persuade more patients to get moving as a way to help reduce stress and/or depression. So part of this is sort of like a duh moment to me, Reg. Yeah, okay, it is good for your cardiovascular health. I think most of us really knew or at least believed that to be true, but it is always nice to see a study confirm what I think perhaps was more so suspected, the fact that if you have stress, if you have anxiety, if you have depression, exercise very oftentimes can be sort of the best medicine, if you will.
I believe we were talking to someone the other day that runs and was talking about how running actually reduces the stress because your eyes move around more. You're looking at things instead of just staring at a screen. The actual running makes your eyes move because you're looking at everything around you, and that gets your brain working and just reduces stress in general.
To be clear, we need to verify that fact, but
correct.
Yes,
correct.
We did have a conversation about that, and I can see where there is at least some legitimacy, anecdotally speaking. Again, this is not something we have gone out and verified, but getting away from the screens nowadays is really difficult. So to be up, moving about, and not necessarily focused on that one thing definitely can be good. And then, as this study pointed out, exercise in general is just associated with lowering brain stress. And I can speak to that because I try to run as often as I can throughout the week. And I'll say it, there's no better way to just feel good after a difficult day than to get out and move around a little bit. It always brings me back down to earth.
Just be honest. You're running away from work. That's the only thing you're doing, right? You're just trying to get away. Get out of it.
Is this a call out? Are you saying not pulling my weight here?
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Well, we'll stick with a medical theme today, now coming to us from Osaka Metropolitan University in Japan. break a leg. It's a common statement in showbiz, but of course nobody wants to learn they actually have a broken bone. In addition to the general pain, fractures that are displaced or complex can require surgery and possibly lengthy recovery times while the patient remains partly or wholly immobilized. Been there, done that, had a few broken bones in my life. Not fun. Now, with the goal of shortening those recovery times, an Osaka Metro University-led research group is focusing on plasma irradiation as a treatment method to speed up bone healing, which, as you might expect, is simply plasma that's been exposed to radiation. Med school grad student Koisuke Saito, along with associate professor Hiramitsu Toyoda, professors Hiroaki Nakamura and Jun Shok, were among the researchers who used lab rats for their experiment. And again, I always say this with all due respect, hopefully I didn't massacre the names there. I don't love this part. The researchers broke the legs of the rats in two ways. Not a huge fan of the lab rats or the laboratory animals, but I understand here why it's being done. One group of 24 rats had normal fractures that are generally easy to heal. The other group had 20 rats with fractures known as non-union, where healing is usually prolonged or may not even happen at all. Some were then irradiated with non-thermal atmospheric pressure plasma, you know, that old term that we throw around, which didn't offer the normal fracture group any significant advantages, but boosted the healing and recovery time of the rats with non-union fractures. The strength of the healed areas of the irradiated non-union rats was also about 3.5 times stronger than that of the non-irradiated ones. By the way, just to go back to this, non-thermal atmospheric pressure plasma, defined as a partially ionized gas with electrically charged particles at atmospheric pressure. So it can't be equated with plasma from blood. It's not biological in nature. It's a relatively new phenomenon in medicine as well, used for the treatment of wounds already, but with a wide range of other applications, topical treatment of skin diseases with microbial involvement, or treatment of cancer diseases even in some cases. So expanding the use here for this irradiated plasma potentially. Furthermore, in vitro study of pre-osteoblastic cells irradiated with the plasma for 5 to 15 seconds showed that the activity of a protein that is an indicator of osteoblast differentiation increased, indicating that maturation of these bone-forming cells was progressing. Quote, collaboration between the medical and engineering fields creates new medical technologies that have never before existed. In the future, combining this treatment method with current fracture treatments is expected to contribute to more reliable bone fusion and shorter recovery times, end quote. That per Professor Toyoda. So promising stuff here. I know nobody likes to sit out for weeks on end with a broken bone, Reggie. And I can say I had one that took an awful long time to heal all the way back in high school. I did break my collarbone at one point. And I don't recall exactly what type of device I had. And this is going back, many years now, but I was prescribed something that blasted some sort of wave into the area that was broken, and it was supposed to promote healing. Now, presumably, we're talking at least 20 years ago here, it wasn't irradiated plasma in that instance, but I do wonder, had I had access to something like this, might it have helped speed up that recovery time and get me back to, well, what I loved to do back in the day, and that is play a lot of sports.
I don't know. There's something about this when I hear the words irradiated just kind of scares me. But I guess.
Because Fallout is now out on Max?
It might be. I get scared. But I am curious, like when it comes to, like you said, sports, how many professional athletes are going to try to push for this that, you break your leg playing football or something, you're back the next week. Or, I don't know how quickly this actually works, but the recovery times for especially athletic injuries seems to be going faster and faster, that it's kind of crazy to think that, I get carted off the field, I'm injured, but I'm back the next week. That could be potentially in the future here, I guess.
Yeah, it's a great point. We see that with all sorts of injuries as new treatments emerge, thanks to advances in medical technology, of course. So yeah, it does make you wonder, someday someone has a compound fracture on the football field, and rather than sitting out the rest of the season, they're taken to the sideline and zapped with something and as good as new. I still think that's probably a long ways off, but it does feel like we inch closer and closer to that sort of thing all the time.
I mean, even if you only miss like 2 to 3 games with a broken bone and you come back and you're perfectly fine, that would be almost miraculous.
No question.
Over a month ago, in fact, on the March 11th episode, we talked about the issues that Voyager 1 was having and how it couldn't communicate with NASA. Well, we have a follow-up on that, as the issue appears to have been fixed. For the first time in 5 months, NASA engineers have received communication from the spacecraft that is decipherable. The communication issue started in November when it was sending a repeating pattern of code. I don't know if you recall, but everything Voyager 1 sends and receives is in binary code. But as I said a few days ago, that communication issue appears to be resolved. Linda Spilker, Voyager project scientist at JPL, said, quote, "We're back in communication with the spacecraft, and we look forward to getting science data back," end quote. So what they discovered is that 3% of the data system's memory was corrupted due to an issue with a single chip that is responsible for the system's memory, including some software code. Well, that chip just wasn't working properly. They aren't sure what caused the failure. It could just be that it was worn out, or possibly struck by energetic particle from space. However, the loss of code on the chip caused that data being sent back to be unusable. Now, there's no way to repair that chip, and there isn't anywhere else to store all the data, so they decided to divide the code into sections and store it in different spots within the flight data system. According to a NASA update, quote, "To make this plan work, they also needed to adjust those code sections to ensure, for example, that they still function as a whole. Any references to the location of that code in other parts of the flight data system memory needed to be updated as well," end quote. So basically, it needs to know not to go to that single spot, but to go to multiple spots to get the information it needs. Now, it took a couple days to figure out if this would work, as it takes 22 and a half hours to reach the probe and another 22 and a half hours to get it sent back. But after a couple days, it appears the fix was successful and readable data was sent back. If you recall, Voyager 1 and 2 were launched in 1977 and are the longest operating spacecrafts in history and are the only spacecrafts to travel beyond the heliosphere, the sun's bubble of magnetic fields and particles that extend beyond the orbit of Pluto. They are over 12 billion miles away from Earth at this point. Now, Voyager 2 did have issues for 7 months in 2020 as its antenna was accidentally pointed in the wrong direction. They did end up fixing that one as well. Voyager project manager Suzanne Dodd said, quote, "We never know for sure what's going to happen with the Voyagers, but it constantly amazes me when they just keep going. We've had many anomalies, and they are getting harder, but we've been fortunate so far to recover from them, and the mission keeps going. And younger engineers are coming into the Voyager team and contributing their knowledge to keep the mission going," end quote.
Yeah, it's pretty wild to me that these individuals, this team of scientists, found a way to repair something that is so far out in space, there's no chance we're ever going to view this physical structure again with our own eyes. So kudos to them. And I believe, as you had mentioned the last time we talked about Voyager, I believe you said it had the computing power of one of those key fobs you use to open and shut your car.
The key fobs have more computing power.
See, that's pretty wild. And kudos to these scientists to be innovative and think of a way to, as you described it, sort of parse out the data and be able to bypass that singular chip or that singular area that was previously needed to send back the data. It's all pretty wild and a testament to problem-solving skills of people who have a lot more gray matter than I do.
And it's great to see we might be getting some of that data that it's been retrieving back to us. Because, you know, obviously, like they said, we've never been this far. We don't know what's out there. We don't know what to expect. So, and I believe I mentioned during the last story that what's important about Voyager 1, it can, it basically collects data in a different spectrum of, I don't know what the right word for that is, but a slightly different spectrum than Voyager 2 does. So Voyager 2 might be out there collecting data, but it's collecting different data than Voyager 1. So it's nice to get both of that information back to see what's happening out in, well, areas where we, like you said, we may never actually even travel. We might get there someday, but it's still nice to know what's out there.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. It's carrying a golden record. It's nice to know that's still intact.
That's right.
Just in case those alien life forms out there think, oh, a record. Good thing I still have a record player to check this out on.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
I think we've all heard the term hillbilly. I mean, there was a TV show about it, right? The Beverly Hillbillies. But where did it start?
Well, old Jed was shooting at some food, and then up through the ground came a bubbling crew, as I recall, Reggie. I think that's where it started.
Yeah, that is very true. Hill folks said, you know, move away from here. But anyways.
<That's right. laughs>
Well, on this day in history, the first known printed occurrence of the word hillbilly was published in the New York Journal in the year 1900. Quote, "In short, hillbilly is a free and untrammeled white citizen of Alabama who lives in the hills, has no means to speak of, dresses as he can, talks as he pleases, drinks whiskey when he gets it, and fires his revolver as the fancy takes him," end quote.
Whiskey when he gets it.
Yeah, again, not the most charming description of any of someone that I've ever heard.
If this guy can find his way into some whiskey, he's going to drink it. Let's just say that.
He's going to speak his mind, drink his whiskey, and shoot his gun, and dress however he pleases, I guess. So, not how I want to be described. However, it actually isn't the first known written version of this. It was the first printed version. The first written one that they've seen came in a railroad journal in 1892. They were referring to a Southern Appalachian resident. Quote, "Then again, I do not think it will do so well. I would hate to see some old railroad man come in here and take my job. And then I don't think it is right to hire some hillbilly and give him the same right as I, just because he was hired the same time as I was," end quote. I don't quite get that argument. You don't think he should have the same right because he was hired at the same time just because he's a hillbilly? I don't get that. But again, first written version of it. As for where the word came from, that is up for some debate. Some relate it to a Scottish-Irish settlement in the Appalachian and Ozark regions. The hill, obviously, referring to the hills where they are. As for the term billy, that comes because the people in the area were supporters of King William III of Scotland and were referred to as Billy Boy. Others say it's a blend of Scottish terms, hill folk mixed with billy, which is an informal way to say man, kind of like saying dude or guy as well. So no matter where you come from, it seems like it came from a Scottish term and when they settled into the area, but where they actually started saying it, that's up for question.
I would have just assumed that they used Billy as sort of a catch-all name, especially at that time, for a man's name, just for an individual, right? You're a guy, you're a Billy.
And it rhymes with hill. You know, hill, right. Bill, hill, hillbilly. Right. It just, yeah, right. That's what I would have assumed, too.
Not too many Williams living up in the hills that I'm aware of.
You don't think so? You don't think of like, William, I got some whiskey for us to drink.
And when we acquire whiskey, we drink it.
That's right.
He used the word acquire as well. Yes,
of course, of course. Hey, just because they're hillbillies doesn't mean they don't know how to talk, right?
That's right.
The article didn't say anything about not being able to speak properly. It just said they spoke their mind.
In perfect English.
Oh, William, they have their pinkies up when they drink their whiskey, you know.
Yes, Reginald.
Well, that'll do it for another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Connect with us via email at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. He's Marcus Path. I'm Reggie Rizzou. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.